Okay, fun seekers, this is it. This is the entire semester in one session. Why? Because in this session, we analyze the eternal struggle of risk versus return. Risk versus return. Do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? And as I said before, relax, don't worry. The math is not hard. It really isn't hard. Somebody else does it for us. Slide number 35, investment return revisited. Over the long term, equities, stocks, have produced the best returns. Remember, we said stocks give us 8 to 10, maybe 11, 12. Income, fixed income securities, bonds, give us 4 to 7 or 8, depending on which bonds we invest in. And cash investments give us 2 to 4, 5% during normal times. These are not normal times, but Mutual funds will more or less, often less, reflect the underlying investments that they invest in, the underlying assets. Okay? So, and you know these from the previous session, right? You've memorized these. You nod your head, yes, thank you very much. Make me feel good. Slide number 36. This is from your book, the sixth edition. And as I said in the syllabus and in the, on the class webpage, I don't care which book you get, the fourth, fifth, or sixth one, they're all basically the same. They've just, you know, been updated as they go along. But this is the slide from the sixth edition. And it shows you how well a dollar has done since the advent of what is often called modern finance since 1925. And there's some historical reasons which we don't want to get into. But it turns out that stocks have done pretty darn well. Now, I want you to ignore small company stocks, all right? Even the people who produce these results, Ibbotson and Associates, they'll tell you that, you know, there's a survivorship bias built in to stock, small company stocks. In other words, you don't talk about the ones that turned into zero, the turned that became nothing. So ignore the small company stock data, all right? Just realize that small company stocks are even riskier, and there's a greater potential for reward, but most people just lose. What I want you to look at are large company stocks. And look at that. Over, what is that, 85 years or so? No, more than that. Stocks have clobbered bonds, which have done, and then treasury bills, which have barely kept pace with inflation. Right? Treasury bills are their example of short-term investments. And we'll discuss treasury bills in more detail in the next session. But there are short-term IOUs, short-term investments in the United States Treasury. Where would you want to be over the last 80-some-odd years? Not bad. Look at the growth of a dollar for over the last 200 years. And what I like about this one is it also includes gold. You know, people talk about gold as gold. What is it? It's a metal. It doesn't pay any interest. It doesn't pay dividends. It doesn't create new markets. It doesn't create new products. It doesn't go internet. It just sits there. It looks good. And look at when gold does well. Gold does well when the world's about to end, right? Civil War, right? Great Depression, World War II. Yeah, gold does well then. And it did well in the high inflation times of the 1970s, but then languished for 20-odd years and has done well the last 10 years. This is usually it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but this is usually an indication that gold is going to languish for another 20 years or so. But nobody knows. There are people who are absolutely convinced that the world is going to fall apart. May even happen in 2012. So you have to own gold. But look at treasury bills. You know, they've done okay compared to inflation, and bonds have done a whole lot better, but bingo, look at what stocks have done. And as we're going to see, this makes sense. It makes sense as we'll continue. It is no accident, slide number 38, it is no accident that stocks and bonds have produced better returns than short-term investments, than treasury bills, than savings accounts, than money market mutual funds, than CDs, cash investments. Otherwise, why would investors assume the higher risk of stocks and bonds, right? Why would they bother? If you're going to get the same return from something that's risky, a stock or a bond, riskier than putting your money in the bank, who would do that? Nobody. That's why it has to happen. Stocks and bonds, specifically stocks, you know, they have to do better, or people would just say, I'm just going to take the risk-free rate of return. The risk-free rate of return is the rate on guaranteed short-term investments. And specifically what the industry uses is the return on 3-month, 90-day U.S. Treasury bills. As we'll see in the next presentation, these are short-term investments, like a CD, like a savings account, but they're through the United States Treasury. So when you hear people talk about the risk-free rate of return, they are almost always discussing what you can get from a treasury bill. And right now, it's almost nothing. Literally, folks, it's almost nothing. And what that leaves us with is a risk premium. That's the reward for bearing risk. That is the extra return on a risky investment over the risk-free rate of return. So if I'm going to take on this extra risk, I want some kind of return for that. And that over and above is called the risk premium. And let's take a look at the historical risk premiums that we've seen over the last 80 some odd years. Again, I want you to ignore small company stocks. But notice that over the last 80-some-odd years, Treasury bills have paid about 3.8%. And that's been what savings accounts have paid over the last 80 years and such. You know, they're not paying that now, but about, you know, between 3 and 5%, almost 4%. And large company stocks have returned almost 12%, 11.7%. So the risk premium is about 8%. We expect at least, or close to, 8% if we're going to invest in the riskier stocks. Now again, ignore these small company stocks because that's skewed way out of balance. But look at bonds. Bonds, corporate bonds, have returned about 6.5%. That's a risk premium of 2.7%. So if we're going to put our money in a corporate bond, which may default, the corporation could go under. It happens, but not that often, we could lose our money. Not so with the United States Treasury bill, because the Treasury is going to pay its bills back. I don't care what anybody says, the Treasury is going to pay its bills back. Long-term government bonds, which again are pretty darn close to guaranteed, are going to give us 5.9%, or have over the last 80-some-odd. You're not paying that now. That's been a risk premium of only 2%. Over the treasury bills. Now you may say, well, what's the difference? Well, these things mature in 30 days or 60 or 90 days. I'm sorry. Yeah, 30 days, 90 days, and 180 days. 1 month, 3 months, and 6 months. Here we're locking in a rate that's hopefully better. And so they're a little riskier. And that has to, not that you're not going to get your money back, but it has to do with interest rates. And we'll discuss that later on when we get to bonds. Okay, we'll discuss the relationship of bonds and interest rates and the very, very important relationship. So you're taking on a little bit more risk than the treasury bills, and that's why you're expecting to get an extra 2%. So does it make sense? You know, I think it makes sense. I think you understand that if you want a better return, you're going to have to take more risk. And you may say, I'm ready to do that, or you may say, I'm not ready to do that. But hopefully at the end of the semester, you will be ready. You'll see that it's not as bad as you think. Especially now. In fact, now is a good time to invest because everybody thinks it's a bad time to invest. But I digress. Slide number 40. Risk versus reward. Risk versus return. You can't get away from this, folks. You can't think about the return of an investment without thinking about the risk involved. Investment return is very straightforward. How much did you start with? How much did you end with? Bip, there's your return. But measuring risk, measuring how much risk you took to receive that return, is much more difficult. In fact, it's impossible. You really can't do it. I mean, how many people know with any accuracy that there's going to be a tsunami? or a meteorite, or Ebola, or whatever. You can't measure some of these risks. So we use an imperfect measurement. Each year, the investment community measures the average annual return and the amount of variance from the average return. Using statistics, some people use the term statistics, the resulting measures of risk are called variance and standard deviation. Slide number 41. Don't drop the course. Don't run and hide. We're not going to actually have to do these calculations. We will leave the calculations for your statistics class. Suffice to say, the higher the variance and standard deviation, the riskier the investment. The higher the variance and standard deviation, the more the investment return will deviation, from the average annual return. And what are these little Greek symbols all mean? Well, folks, it's not that hard. I'm not going to ask you to do it. Don't worry about it. But you take the return for every year that you're measuring, and you subtract it from the average return. And then you square it. And why do you square it? That's to get rid of all the negative signs. When you square things, they all become positive. You sum that up. That's what that symbol means, summation. You add up all those numbers and you divide by the number of numbers, minus one. Don't worry about that, statistics. And that gives you the variance. You take the square root, right? You squared everything. Now you take the square root, and you get the standard deviation. And again, you don't have to do these calculations. What are they trying to show? They're trying to show how far away your return could be from the average return. And they're just fancy schmancy terms for you can lose your money. So, slide number 42. This is from your book, but it's been updated. In fact, we just updated it with 2011 data. Look at this. This is a distribution. And it should seem familiar. It should look vaguely familiar. So, for example, in 2010 and 2006 and 2004, the return was between 10 and 20%. In 2011 and 2007 and 2005, the return was between 0 and 10%. In 2000 and 1990 and 1990-81, it was between 0 and negative 10%. See, it was negative, right? Some years, only a few, it was really high. Look at 1958, 1935, 1928. It was between 40 and 50. The 54, 1933, it was between 50 and 60. And then some years, 2008, negative 30, negative 40. Look, these are real numbers, folks. At the beginning of 2008, if you put $10,000 in the stock market, when you looked at it again, December 31st on 2008, at the end of the year, you had lost almost $4,000. Like 6,300, I think, 37%, the S&P fell, dropped. So yeah, so those are real numbers. But notice that most of the numbers are in here. Does this look familiar to you? Right, the normal distribution, often called the bell curve, slide 43. Investment returns over time tend to mirror what is called the normal distribution. And this is where we get the idea of probability. You see, that little funny looking symbol there, that stands for standard deviation. So if you go, here's the mean, here's the average, if you walk one standard deviation away from the mean in either direction, that's about 2/3 probability. And this is the old slide. I got to update it with the one from slide number, from chapter number 6 of the new book. If you're looking at the new book, chapter number 6, this is the old number, so I have to fix that. But I'll fix that by the time you see this. But you're seeing the old one. Doesn't matter. It's similar. So 1 plus or minus 1 standard deviation, we will have a 2/3 chance of that happening. If you go 2 standard deviations away, and that's the second little area right here, it goes to 95%. If you go 3 standard deviations away, it goes to 99%. So when we talk about the 100-year flood, right, it's the same thing that's true here. 100-year, there's a 1 in 100 chance that you're going to be more than 3 standard deviations away from the mean. You don't know which direction, so there's going to be 1 year somewhere where the stock market's going to lose more than 50%, and there's going to be 1 year where the stock market's going to gain more than 74%, 73.7%. But it hasn't happened yet. And maybe it'll happen this year. Who knows? But you don't know. That's the thing. It's probability. But the chances are 2/3 that it's going to wind up in here. So does it now make more sense, standard deviation? Does it? Go back and look at it again. Look at that graphic on the previous slide and look at this graphic. And remember that it is not a perfect measure. It's an imperfect measure of risk. The volatility is real. You don't know what's going to happen. If the world falls apart, well. But I'm pretty optimistic that the next 20, 30 years, providing we don't blow ourselves up, should be pretty darn good for the markets around the globe. And that's means that more and more and more people are going to enter the middle class and have clean water and good clean food and clothes on their backs. And now, you know, we're talking about the destruction of the middle class here in the United States, but you know, in comparison to the rest of the world, we're still doing a whole lot better. So don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we don't have problems here. We do. But you look at some other countries, and they've got a long way to come. And that's a tremendous opportunity, as far as I'm concerned. Slide number 44. This is, again, from your book, and it's not the best graph because it shows that the bars all the same. The maximum bars are all the same size, but not that shouldn't be. These bars, you know, these bars should be a lot smaller. These bars should be a lot taller if you were looking at that in the aggregate. But more what it's trying to show you is that with stock investments, there's a wider dispersion. There's a greater variance, a greater standard deviation, because they're riskier. And the bonds, it gets closer and closer and closer until finally, with the treasury bonds, they're really, really close. There's a very narrow distribution. There's a very narrow variance. The greater the standard deviation, the wider the distribution of returns, and the riskier the investment as measured by standard deviation, which we've already acknowledged is not a perfect measurement. Make sense? Yeah, it does. If we want better returns, we're going to have to take more risk. Slide number 45. Now here is a another view that's from their book, and if you don't like it, just ignore it. But it's trying to show you as the standard deviation gets larger, so does the annual average return. The average return goes up, the standard deviation goes up. So you see that's the idea. Here is this graph. If you don't like this graph, don't worry about it. If you like the graph, study it. But what is the question? What happens when the risk? When the return goes up, so does the risk. The standard deviation gets larger. 46. So now we can complete the global picture regarding risk versus return. In the first session, we said, you know, how well did the did the 18 largest economies, well, not largest economies, but 18 gross domestic product ranked by individual. How large, the wealthiest, if you will, wealthiest countries do. And we saw that Sweden did the best. The United States was sort of in the middle here at 9.5. Sweden did the best. But who had the best risk-adjusted return, huh? Well, Sweden may have had the best average annual return, but you had to accept almost 60% more risk to get that return. In other words, you had to ride a much bigger roller coaster. The highs were higher and the lows were lower. Look who had the best standard deviation, meaning the lowest, over that 25-year period. Huh? Bam, 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 da, 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 da. That's why the United States is so coveted by global investors. Right? They know they're not going to get the biggest bang for the return, but they're going to get a much less risk. They're going to get a better risk, as we say, risk-adjusted rate of return. Okay, so you got it. Okay. That's my flag-waving slide. Slide number 47. So, does yous got it yet? Yous want high returns? Yous gonna get high risk. Yous gonna lose some money, maybe all of your money. And if anybody tells yous different, they're lying. They're lying. So when, not if, folks, when you see an advertisement for a 12% safe rate of return, you will know that the chances of losing your money are pretty high. Or there's some other strings attached. Maybe that 12% is for 3 months and then it goes down to 2%. When you see claims such as 300% or 3,000%, and you think, no, Payan, I'm not going to. Yes, you will. You are going to see that if you get involved investing for any length of time. You're going to get on mailing lists, you're going to get on email lists, and they're going to know that you're interested in investing. I mean, they're on Yahoo Finance. There's a couple of documents and a commentary on the class website about this guy who advertises on Yahoo. And I'm surprised Yahoo allows him. But now you're seeing things for these penny stock things, which are just total scams. When you see claims for 3,000%, you sit on your hands, grab your wallet, because these people are breaking the law. Yeah, you know, we have freedom of speech in this country, right? Well, not really. I mean, we do in many facets, but there are some places where you just can't run into a crowded area and yell fire. I mean, that's not protected speech. And the same thing is true in the investment community. This is a regulated industry, and you can't just jump up and down and say, I'm going to give you 3,000%. Eventually, you're going to get a friendly letter from the Securities and Exchange Commission telling you to cease and desist, and it takes them forever to stop these people. Here's a guy who for 20 years, Wade Cook, was telling people that if they're not getting 20% per month, then they are obviously just listening to the crooks on Wall Street and should be listening to us. And it took them years to shut this guy down. And then he opened up, you know, he sort of distanced himself. And they opened up as a second separate agent company. Go ahead, type in Wade Cook into any internet search engine and see, you know, if you don't believe me. And there's dozens of these things. Wise Trade, Day Trading Coach, Optionetics. Just go ahead. And we'll discuss these later on. And in the face-to-face class, I usually will, you know, show a few of these scams. But it's true, folks. They're out there. And none of my students, right? None of my students are going to get suckered in. Go ahead. Go to the go get the free food. Go to the presentation and watch other suckers get sucked in. I know all you folks have something in your garage that's worth at least $3,000 that's not even just sitting there not even doing anything. This $3,000 will make you $3,000 in the first 2 weeks, so you don't have to worry about putting it on your credit card. No, folks, those credit card bills, they will be gone. You know, I could make, I think, a lot of money if I had no ethics whatsoever. Slide number 48. But isn't somebody doing it? I mean, isn't somebody making tremendous rates of return? Yeah, there are some people, folks, that make tremendous rates of return. But these people are not investors. They are traders. I don't like that term because it sounds almost like a traitor. Yeah, speculators. Be careful. Speculators. That's the term we like to use. Being a speculator, being a trader can be very profitable. Do not get me wrong. But it is also very stressful and incredibly perilous. And the thing is, you are up against the best in the world. It's not a perfect analogy, and I'm not a big sports fan, so don't get me wrong. I don't watch other people exercise. But have you ever gotten into a batting cage? Someone told me that now they can go up to 70 miles an hour, but normally they're limited to about 60 miles an hour. I did it once, and that ball came by me at 60 miles an hour. Wow, that was fast. And then you think, in the major leagues, those pitchers can pitch at 95 miles an hour, some upwards of 100. Yeah, you better be pretty darn good. And this, the same thing is true with trading. You better be pretty darn good. In the face-to-face class now, we would read a section from a book called Liar's Poker. It's already up there. I already recorded it, so you can listen to it. And it talks about John Goodfreund, means good friend in German, versus John Merriweather. It's a wonderful discussion of what it's like to be in this world. The measure of stress, the amount of stress, is phenomenal. And Mr. Merriweather became very powerful and popular because he was the best bond trader in the world. And he hooked up with two specifically, people from the economics world who had won the Nobel Peace Prize, created the most wildly profitable company in the 1990s called Long Term Capital Management, and almost took down the markets in 1998. And you read about these, and we have in the face-to-face class, sometimes if we have time, we have a video at the end of the semester that I show. It's called The Trillion Dollar Bet. And it's like The Hobbit to The Lord of the Rings. It's the precursor to what happened in the 2000s with the mortgage crisis. It's unbelievable, but it's totally believable. And then there's another little clip here that, again, here's the link. John Bogle I never remember how he pronounces his last name, he's retired now, but he's still very active. He was the guy who built Vanguard into one of the world's largest, now I think the world's largest, mutual fund company. And he has an interview with Steve Forbes, and it's a long interview, but the one I want you to key on is emotion is the enemy. Emotion is an investor's enemy. It's a segment of the interview. Excellent interview. He asks you right off the bat, before you start, are you an investor or are you a trader? Right? And if you're a trader, good luck. That's all I can say, and that's what I say. And he says, then this isn't taught much. I haven't seen this taught in the schools. I said, Mr. Bogle, I do. I teach it to my students. Slide number 49. So, what is a realistic rate of return for me? No, for you, right? After you have taken this course, you will have a strong knowledge of the most popular types of investments: stocks, bonds, cash, mutual funds. You will also know what levels of returns and what levels of risks you should reasonably expect to receive. And if you are a patient, long-term investor, I believe it is realistic to expect 8, 9, 10%. I am certainly working on it myself. And some have done better and some have done worse and a few have done really bad, but just a scant few. The ones I knew going in were very, very risky. Sure enough, they turned out just as we expected. And of course, as we will reiterate time and time again, there are no guarantees. No guarantees. Unless you go with, exactly, savings account or short-term investments such as treasury bills. Slide number 50. Well, is that good enough? Is 9, 10% good enough? It turns out the answer to this question is yes. But there are some big constraints, some big caveats, so to speak. If you start early, if you are patient and consistent, if you do not get too cocky or too greedy, if you do not chase after every next big thing that comes along, surefire, guaranteed, can't lose, and most importantly, if you don't panic when the market swoons. Because you know what? It's going to happen. You are going to experience, especially if you're younger millennials, 2, 3, 4 market downturns. Or more, major downturns. The trick is to take advantage of the time value of money. Because these downturns become excellent buying opportunities. If you just keep putting $50, $100 a month away, you're going to be taking advantage of those things. You're not going to be running and hiding and then trying to figure out when the time to come back is. Because it's impossible to do. I don't know anybody's done it. I'll never forget. I have a friend who's much smarter than I am, and he's the kind. I mean, he has some, you know, set and forget investments, but he also likes to aggressively play the market in and out. And this was near the end of 2008. We were having lunch and dinner or something, talking about investing in electric vehicles. We're both big electric vehicle fans, and we were comparing notes, and I said, yeah, well, we're down about 40%, meaning my wife and I, right? And he knows I'm a buy and hold type of investor. He knows I just put the money in, leave it in, put in every so often, every month or so. And he kind of went, yeah, well, I've been putting money in and out, and I'm down about 40% too. So, you know, why put up with the driving yourself crazy at night, deciding when you're going to take money out and put money in, and you wind up with the same result? The trick is to take advantage of the time value money, also called compounding, compound annual return. Now, this slide is really from Business 121, so if you've taken the financial planning and money management class, this should look familiar. We have a document, a worksheet up on the website, but I want to tell you right off the bat, I'm going to say it again, these calculations will not be on the exam. I don't ask you to do these calculations. We're going to do them later on in reverse. The time value of money is the amount to which a sum you invest now will increase based on a specified rate of return and time period. Calculating amounts into the future is called compounding. That's the verb we use. We compound these rates of return into the future. We can do it for a lump sum, a single amount, a principal, or we can do it for a series of deposits, a series stream of investments, also called an annuity. But I don't want to use that term because that's also a life insurance investment. We will learn how to go from the future back to the present. That's called discounting. That's the present value of money. That's more important in this class. And look, we don't do it until chapter 6, so relax. We don't have to do anything right now. When we learn how to assign valuations to stocks and bonds, it's very important to say, okay, if we're going to get this money in the future, what is it worth to us today? And that's the reverse. So, in the face-to-face class, if we have time, we do these calculations, or maybe I just show them to people, because we're not going to do the calculations on the exam. We'll worry about them later. But what they are going to show you, folks, is that if you take a long-term perspective, you start early. That's why I love it when the classes are filled up with millennials. the young folks, the digital generation, Gen Y, they call them. If you're patient and you accept, you're going to accept some risks, don't worry, you're going to experience downturns, but you get, say, 10% over the next 30 years or 40 years, you can become very wealthy. That's what these will show you. That's what these this worksheet will show you in these exercises. And we do them, as I said, in the Business 121 class. Now, what happens is the baby boomers, the 50-somethings and the 40s and the late Gen Xers come back and say, why didn't you tell me this 25 years ago? Sorry. But yeah, you can do it. Lucky you, members of the great American economic machine. So go ahead and do those. Realize, and the answer key's there, and there's a commentary. So if you don't know how to do them, don't worry, because we'll learn later on. One last comment. Slide 52. One last comment on risk versus return. Psst. Here is one of Piano's secret tips. Avoid large losses with the vast majority of your investments. If you want to take a little bit and, you know, play the market, as I hate that term, play the market. But with your vast majority of your retirement account, house, educational savings account for your kids or whatever, avoid large losses, because the numbers don't work in both directions. Here you see a $100 investment. The first year, investment A gets 85%. Wow! Eye-popping returns. Investment B gets 10%. Boring. But the next year, you lose 50%. Well, you knew it was risky to go in, and you're going into it, right? Here, you gained 9%. So where would you put 100 bucks, huh? Many people would say, well, I'd still pick investment A. Watch what happens. The first year, investment A returned $85, 85% on $100, right? 10 bucks. But what happens when it goes down 50%? Ouch. Yeah, right. The numbers going down are not the same as the numbers going up. So the 50% drop basically wiped out everything you gained and then some, whereas the slow, stodgy investment here, yeah, you got it. Okay. Now, before we embark on the process of identifying and familiarizing ourselves with the longer-term, higher-yielding investments such as stocks and bonds, let us learn how and where to park our money using short-term investments. But wait! One more time! Slide number 54. The greater the variance and standard deviation of the average annual returns of an investment, the greater the variance and standard deviation of the average annual returns of an investment, is it A, the greater the risk, the more volatile, the more volatility, B, the lesser the risk, the lesser the volatility, C, there is no correlation, no relationship between standard deviation and average annual returns, or standard what? I always hated statistics. Yeah, it's A. The greater the variance and standard deviation of the average annual returns, the greater the risk. Don't you dare get this one wrong on the exam. It is bad for my self-esteem. Do you understand? I just go, oh my God, they're not listening to what I'm saying. What am I going to do? What am I going to do? So make sure you understand this. You want high returns? You're going to get high risk. Okay, we're almost done, section one. When we come back, we'll go through short-term investments. Get them out of the way. Understand them. They're not that difficult. See you next time.